do you say this man is? Please be seated. First of all, I want to thank you for your prayers at our vacation. Things went real well. Means I have to go back and try it out again as soon as possible. I encourage everybody to do that. But I told you we'd pray for you, especially on the Sundays that we were on vacation. And the first Sunday was in the Netherlands, and it was a little drizzle outside, but they don't take you on trips anymore, side trips. They're called excursions. So we didn't go for an excursion on that day because it was drizzling a little too much, and so they said, you can't go, we're not going to go to the cathedral we had hoped for today. Let's stay in on the boat, just getting to know one another and things like that. So Kathy and I had a private service, communion service in our cabin. But at the end of the trip, we were in Switzerland. So we went through the Netherlands, Germany, France, Switzerland. Switzerland, we wind up in the Lucerne, a beautiful, beautiful, magnificent monastery. Imagine a secular tour taking you to a monastery, but excursion on a monastery. And I thought it would just be a little monastery, but it was more than a little monastery. It was a gigantic, huge, humongous Benedictine monastery with a German name that I could never remember, so I'm not going to try to pronounce it, but it was beautiful, and it was a very holy site. Kathy and I went to the service there, and it was at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and the place was packed. That was good to see, and we were able to participate in the service. That was a very wonderful thing. So we prayed for you at the monastery, and I hope you felt a little bump in holiness as we were praying for you. I thank you again for your prayers. We thank you, and it was, again, it drizzled maybe once or twice. Nothing like they've got in Texas, nothing like they had a couple weeks before we went on the river trip on the Rhine. But for us, it was beautiful, and everyone claimed that San Diego had brought the weather. We said, yes, we did. Thank you very much. And they should have cut us down a little bit in price, but that didn't help at all. But it was beautiful weather as well. Back to the homily. You know, every once in a while, we get the news media that carries this story, true story, about people who claim to be the Messiah. The latest one that I heard was in Knoxville, Tennessee. A local man was claiming to be Jesus Christ. He was arrested after he assaulted his wife and was charged with a domestic violence law. The warrant stated that he assaulted his wife, shoved her into a chair, threatened her if she left him with bodily harm, and he also ripped out a telephone and smashed all the car windows. He was yelling about being Jesus, a deputy wrote in the warrant. And at the Knox County Jail, a correctional officer computer records that they asked the man his religion. And he said, I'm Jesus Christ. Who do you think? He also told jail officials that he wanted John, Paul, and Moses to be his visitors on his visitors list. Well, I'm sure he made that one. At last report, he was being held on $5,000 bail, bond, not bail, bond, and was scheduled to appear in court. Obviously, he was a very sick person. Fast back and forward instead of backwards. And backwards from us today, I'm sorry. In the first century, Palestine, it wasn't unusual for people to claim that they were the Messiah. Happened all the time. After all, the Jewish people had been looking for a Messiah for hundreds of years, and one who had come to deliver them from the Jews and their enemies. So it wasn't unusual for a person, either out of irrational spirit of greatness or a cynical means of acquiring power and authority, to claim that they were the one everybody had been waiting for. How would people be able to discern who was this genuine Messiah, who was or who was not? John the Baptist was unsure if this was. John the Baptist was one of the most prominent religious figures of his time, rivaling Jesus in popularity. John considered himself to be the forerunner of the Messiah. It was his task to announce the coming of the Lord. At Jesus' baptism, which was performed by John, John taught that and thought that he had figured it out. As Jesus was coming out of the water, he saw the heavens open, the sun come down and shone upon Jesus, and a voice came from out of nowhere saying, "This is my son, who I love." And the people were surprised. "I need to be baptized you," Jesus says. And John said, "Wait a minute, no, I need to be baptized by you. You are the one that can baptize me." And further, Matthew tells us as soon as Jesus was baptized, he went up out of the water. As I said, the heavens opened up. And the voice was told, "He is the one." Note that it does not say that John saw the dove or heard the voice. Still, it is evident that John felt that Jesus was the one. However, it wasn't a slam dunk. Jesus never did quite act like the Messiah that John was looking for. It's probable that John shared the common expectation that the coming Messiah would be a military type. He would stir up the people to revolt against the iron grip of Rome that had held them down for hundreds of years. But his cousin was content to be a humble teacher, a healer. Could John have been mistaken? Later, when John was imprisoned, he sent two of his disciples to Jesus with this message. When the men came to Jesus, they said, "John the Baptist sent us to ask you, are you the one who is to come, or should we expect someone else?" It appears that John was confused by the direction Jesus' ministry was taking. It was not as obvious that Jesus was the Messiah that John had hoped for. In response to John's question, Jesus answered, "Go back and report to John what you have seen and heard. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, those who have had leprosy are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised from the dead, and the good news is preached to the poor." Obviously, being a Messiah had nothing to do with starting a revolt. Evidently, healing those who were hurting and proclaiming good news to the poor was what a Messiah was all about. Even Jesus' closest friends and family were confused with that ministry. So it was a big deal on the occasion when Simon Peter testified that Jesus certainly was the one who was to come. You know the story. You heard it this morning. It happened in the region of Caesarea Philippi. Jesus asks his disciples, "Who do people say that the Son of Man is?" They replied, "Some that John the Baptist, others Elijah, and still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets." "But how about you?" Jesus said. "Who do you say I am?" Simon Peter blurts out, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." Jesus was pleased with Peter's response, and he says, "Blessed are you, Simon of Jonah, for this has not been revealed to you by flesh and blood, but by my Father in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not overcome it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth, it will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven." "You are the Messiah," said Simon Peter, "the Son of the living God." The question that confronts you and me today is the same one that confronted Peter and the disciples. Who do you say Jesus is? Opinions vary. For some people, he is an example of the best of what it means to be a human. He's the ideal person for us to emulate. He is the model for which we all should be alike. Of course, Jesus was the measure of our lives. He is the perfect example of what a human being ought to be. For some people, that is good enough where Jesus is concerned. But he is the absolute standard. He is the ultimate role model for us humans. He is humanity in its finest form. But for most of us, Jesus is more than just the best that humanity can produce. He is also the best representation of what God is like. When a little boy was asked to describe Jesus, he thought for a moment and then replied, "Jesus is the best picture God has ever taken." I like that one. Jesus is the best picture God has ever taken. Author and former Divinity School professor John Killinger explains Christ's role in another way. He says Jesus is God's way of getting rid of bad reputation. What does that mean? Humanity had many ideas and intuitions about the nature of God prior to the coming of Jesus. And he was vengeful, eye for an eye. But even the most brilliant theologian was like a blind man trying to describe an elephant. How could any mortal capture the essence of the divine other? It's beyond the capacity of the human brain. Even more critically, had bad descriptions of God, who has caused people to perform outrageous rituals, such as infant sacrifice, temple prostitution, and slaughterers of unbelievers, a practice that is still carried out in many parts of the world today. Bad ideas of God always produce correspondence, bad behavior. If someone says to you, "Oh, well, it doesn't matter what you believe, just so you're sincere about it," ask them to consider those armies, even as the world is today, who send children out to be slaughtered so that they can go to their God who is in heaven. Because we cannot climb up to God, God reaches down to us as a babe in Nazareth. He is the revelation of what God is really like. I'm reminded of the final scene that I saw in a movie recently on the way back from our trip. You get to watch movies. I watched 5 of them, hoping the 12 hours would go by a little faster, and they did. But the last movie I saw, I was hesitant in even watching because I'd seen it before. I said, "What? That's a good movie, but," and I got a few more hours to before we land. So I watched Shrek for I don't know how many times. In case you haven't seen the movie Shrek, I definitely recommend it. It's a story about a big, fat, green monster. He rescues the princess Fiona. Fiona is a beautiful creature who bears a striking resemblance to Cameron Diaz with the red hair. However, Princess Fiona is under a curse. Every night, she becomes a monster, every bit as green and fat as Shrek. Every day, she becomes a Cameron Diaz with red hair again. Beautiful. This cycle is to repeat itself until, in classic fairy tale fashion, she finally experiences true love. Ah. At the end of the movie, Shrek finally sees for the first time Fiona, the monster persona she's been hiding from him all the time, and he loves her and kisses her anyway, monster to monster. And then something quite unexpected happens, something that never happens in traditional fairy tales. Rather than being transformed back into the beautiful Cameron Diaz, like princess, Fiona is permanently transformed into a fat, green monster. She loves Shrek so much that she gives up her former beauty and becomes looking just like him. Aha. That is, of course, what God does for us in Jesus Christ. Out of his great love for us, God empties himself and becomes as we are. Who is this man, Jesus? He is the ultimate role model for humanity. He is humanity at its finest. Yet, because he is more than that, he is also the best representation of what God is like. As the little boy said, Jesus is the best picture God has ever taken. So I ask you again today, who do you say the Son of Man is? Jesus is asking you. And for once, Simon Peter got it right. You are the Son of God, the Messiah. So I ask you, who is Christ to you? What difference does he make in your life? In the name of the Father, of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.